everybody. Good evening. Welcome to Conversations with Auntie. I am Tanya Lynn. I am that auntie, the auntie that you can say anything you need to say. We deal with real life issues because we live a real life. Today, my wonderful guests are Stephen and Melanie Smith. We are going to discuss their book, Hearts of Fire, How to Have a God Marriage. That is so important to start off right so you end up right and everything be right and tight in between. Welcome to Conversations with Auntie.
Thanks for having us.
You're more than welcome. I am excited to interview both of you today. You are some wonderful people. And I was going to wait to the end to do this, but I want everybody to understand and know who they are listening to with me on this day. And so just a little capsule of them. This anointed husband and wife, they demonstrate their passion for the Lord, his people, and the lost. For over 20 years, they have been a remarkable force in ministry. This husband and wife team are natural leaders, yet humbly develop and support existing ministries as well as help to establish new ministries. However, it is their passion for the presence of God that causes them to teach and lead others in the way of Christ. This is the core to their ministry. Stephen and Melanie Smith are currently fully engaged in their roles as assistant pastors and ordained apostles under the leadership of Chief Apostle Joseph Prude and Apostle Sandra Prude at New Hope Fellowship Church. They teach, preach, and continue their first love of leading praise and worship and heading the marriage ministry. This dynamic duo is indeed and in fact definitely relationship experts, not just in marriage, but in family relationships. They have ministered to many families in crisis successfully, and today they are our guests. So, y'all, I want to talk about your personal lives, first of all. Steve, you are a personal shopper and stylist for men. How did you get involved in that?
I would say that it really comes from my mother. Really loved fashion, and she kind of passed that shopping bug on to me. And my wife brought me in. I didn't used to take my time to shop, and after going shopping with the shopping expert that she is,
yes,
I learned if I'm going to do this, I might as well do it right.
I like that, and she's a deal shopper too. She's fabulous on a budget. I love
absolutely.
And so with you, my dear sister, you are just phenomenal. Ever since you came out the womb, you've been doing hair and fashion. you own Hairsmith and Company. That's your salon. But you do Crown Glory, and those are wigs for ladies who might have thinning hair and cancer survivors and alopecia. And so I joke, but it's the truth.
Yes.
You've been doing beauty all your life.
Yes.
All your life. And so as you became older, was there anything else that you wanted to do?
Actually, yes, but that was the main thing. I actually did not start out wanting to be a hairstylist.
Okay.
I wanted to be a pediatrician.
Really?
Yes, I did. I really wanted to be a pediatrician until I took, I think, biology in middle school, and we had to cut up an earthworm, and I realized that I was not going to be a doctor because I couldn't even handle that. My stomach, I couldn't do it. I couldn't deal with the formaldehyde. I just couldn't do it. So, but I was already doing hair. I had clients coming home from school with me. And I have friends tell me now, remember you cut my bangs in the sixth grade? I said, what? You know, they were coming home from school with me. I was doing their hair at home, and my mother let me. You know, it was just it was a passion back then, but I thought it was a hobby.
Okay.
And then as time progressed, I realized that that's what I was going to continue to do. So I have a desire to teach it at some point later on. I did do that for a minute, but later on I'll probably fall into my instructing. But right now, I'm just doing that, and I'm enjoying making the wigs. Now making the wigs have become, it's fashionable.
Yes.
But I initially started to make them because I had a few clients that had cancer.
Oh, wow.
And as their hair began to leave them, they needed, you know, help.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to have one particular client, and I did her first. And I wanted her to look the same, you know, as she was going through her treatment, I wanted her to look and feel like she always did. So I created a wig that looked just like her hair. And she ended up passing away. It really broke my heart. But even in the casket, she looked like she did. We made that hair still look good.
And that is so important that the inward beauty matches the outward beauty. I know for me, I went through a season undiagnosed with multiple sclerosis, And just as a personal testament to you, you made sure that my outward beauty matched my inward beauty. And I did my first movie premiere during that time. We got the Fly and Fabulous,
Fabulous.
And so that is just so awesome, how you're able to pour in their spirit and in their body and dress the outside so that it matches the dormant that is already on the inside. Because when we feel good, and when we, you know, that's one thing, but when we don't feel good, but we're still looking good, your mindset is crucial in the time of healing. And when you're not, you know, in the best space in your life, whether it's illness, financial, between jobs, divorce, you know, whatever it is. So I commend both of you for what you do to help people maintain a level of dignity, in their life. You know, it's one thing to know that you're this person, but it's another thing that when you look in the mirror, you're like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I see, I'm giving it,
Yes.
You know, even if nobody else says it, you feel that about yourself.
Yes.
And so also, I'm going to talk back with you now, Steve. You also, with the Cleveland Municipal School District, you have helped families that were in crises. And so how was that, and how does that look for you now as a, as an apostle and assistant pastor at New Hope Fellowship?
Well, it was very fulfilling. It was a culture shock at first when I first arrived in the school district, school, to find out that school wasn't the same. It wasn't the same as what I knew to be school. And so I was dealing with a whole new culture. So, but I adjusted quickly, and it was a labor of love. I love youth, and I developed relationships with the castaways, the ones that some of the teachers were frankly intimidated by the children, and they would send them to my room. And over the years, I just developed relationships, and it was a wonderful, wonderful thing.
And then how does that transition to your responsibilities as an assistant pastor at New Hope?
Actually, it's it was a pretty seamless transition, because I realized later that that's what I was doing, pastoring the children. And pastoral care is my wife and myself, that is our specialty. We're all about people.
You know what, and I think that is so necessary even as pastors, because you both were pastors as well. We all three were pastors.
Right.
And I think it's necessary to be able to be not just relevant, but relatable.
Yes.
Relatable. And sometimes we don't necessarily understand the assignment that God has for us, but down the road we understand that what we went through was necessary so that we can help somebody else get through. And so that's, and in a transition, what happens in the natural easily transitions to how we help and heal people in the spirit, because it's a hospital for the sick. That's what we say all the time.
Yes.
And so the last place that they need to come in wounded and go out wounded is the church. It's the church. So I commend you for the work that you do, at the dedicated work and the consistent, diligent work that you do at the Hope Fellowship Church, where I'm also a member.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome.
Can I say that a song came to mind as you said that? I believe Fantasia actually recorded it, but one of the lines in there says, I am who I am today because you used my mistakes. You worked them for my good like no one else ever could. And God told me to tell you, they say, it was necessary. So I just like the line as you begin to say that you're right. We are who we are a lot of times because of what we've gone through. And God allows us to make mistakes, corrects us, brings us back through so that we can help somebody else, so that we can bring someone else through.
Absolutely, because it's necessary.
Yeah.
God never gives us something to hoard.
That's correct.
Never, and he never sets us up to fail.
That's right. Melody said it through the song, I would say through the scripture, that it, the scripture says, all things work together for
Come
the
on.
Good of them who love the Lord and are called according
Romans
to
Romans 8:28.
Absolutely.
That's my, I'll just put in Janae, my daughter Janae, the youngest, I'll be in the hospital, 8:28. She's like, okay, Romans, okay, Romans. But what I love about that, it's personal because my mother, my late mother, her birthday was 8:28.
Wow.
So how awesome is that? You know, because it does, I don't care what it is, the worst situations, at some point you will see that it did work for your good because it was necessary. It was necessary. Now you have a shirt. What's going on with that shirt there, Miss Blingy?
Well,
what does that SW stand for?
Superwoman. It says, I am Superwoman.
Okay.
And about four years ago.
Yeah.
I had a notion to just have an event. To have an event. And the Lord told me to have an event for women. It was like a tea, I called it. And to have it outside of the church.
Hmm.
Because I wanted to draw some people that weren't churchy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called up Renee Fowler, who's my friend.
Yes.
And I
said,
And I said, hey, I have an idea. And she said, sure, sis, whatever you want. So we went in on a Sunday when the boutique is usually closed.
Yes.
We tricked it out a little bit, moved some things around, and we had an event there. And it was so phenomenal. We had about 60 women in there. All we did was put a flyer up.
Mm-hmm.
Put it all over social media, told our friends, and they packed the place out. And at that point, the Lord told me to call my sister-in-law. And I called my sister-in-law and I said, well, hey, this is what I feel like we need to do. And I'm gonna speak. And then I had Renee speak in between us. And that was the first time she had ever spoken.
Right.
And she did her first Keeping Your Pretty, mm-hmm. which now when we log on to see her, mm-hmm. she has Keeping Your Pretty on there. So it started at this event. And we did, I spoke, and then my sister-in-law spoke after Renee. And when she spoke,
this just said Pamela Smith.
Yes, is my sister-in-law. And she's Elder Pamela Smith.
Yes, she
at her church. And we actually had the very same message. We did not talk about it. It was the same thing. We had a little tiff where we have actually fallen out. We're very, very close. We finished each other's sentences. That's how close we were. And we have fallen out over some family stuff. And when God dealt with us and we restored our relationship, that's when the Lord told me to do this. And when we looked at our notes, we had the same notes.
Yep.
And we were talking about the situation that we had dealt with, but that God showed both of us how very important it is to have females around you. And a lot of times we decide, I don't need another female friend.
Hmm.
You know, women are really difficult to get along with. You know, it's a lot of
catfighting,
all of that.
Yes.
And God wanted us to show everybody else how you can restore a relationship and how very important relationships are, and to demonstrate what restoration looked like. So that's what we did. And from there, we started getting phone calls and messages saying, when are you going to do it again? When are you going to do it again?
Right.
So from there, the Lord said, through many people, that was not just a one-time event. That's a ministry.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to have an event. Mm-hmm. I was not trying to have a ministry because I was doing a whole lot of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's a ministry. So from that, we wrote a book together, Pamela and I, and the book is called I Am Superwoman, so it looks like my shirt, and it's helping your sister tap into your God-given abilities.
Okay.
So we just want to push on each other, pull on each other, tug on each other, mm-hmm. and say, hey, you can do that. Why don't you do it?
We become the midwives.
Right, exactly.
To one another. We become the doulas.
Yes.
The advocate for yes. one another. And it was an awesome event. It was phenomenal. And what I loved, it was different age groups. It yes. wasn't just a specific age group. It was the younger ones, the older, the middle age, the season, the spring in your life, the winter in your life, the rosebud of your life. And hey, that'd be good.
That's good.
Yeah. More about it. You know, so that it was phenomenal. It was absolutely phenomenal. And so let me segue to you, because you actually mentor and do a lot of work with the young men, Steve.
Yes, I have for years. I just love young people. Mm-hmm. And male mentors are scarce these days, to say the least.
Yeah.
In our community, we need men to show the way
yes.
and to develop relationships with our young men. Our young men in general, this generation has become angry.
Yeah.
And they're angry because the love is missing,
yes.
the a father figure, or even an uncle, mm-hmm. you know. There's so few and far between, mm-hmm. and it causes a larger gap between the generations.
Now, I want to share a story, and I know you don't mind me sharing this, but it's a very personal story about your father, my sweetie. And you said you got you and your brothers to take a car.
Yes.
So that you guys and your father could develop a stronger bond relationship. And I think that was so unique that you were able to identify something that you could all do together, learn together, grow together, while also developing a relationship with him. And I think that we don't understand, it's not as hard as we really think it is. We make it hard. But in the simplicity of 18 holes, you have nothing but a ball, a club, air, an opportunity. That was so unique, and I'll never forget that story, because I use it often when I tell people, well, do you golf? Well, you know, won't you learn how to golf with your sons? You know, because then you'll learn to golf, but guess what? You'll learn something about each other, too. The resiliency, you'll learn patience, you'll learn what triggers. You'll just start conversations randomly. So that was phenomenal.
Yes, I am so glad to this day that I made that decision. I realized early in age that my relationship with my father wasn't as close as I desired it to be. So I took initiative to strengthen our relationship. I realized he's a person just like me.
Now let me stop you right there. So many times children, adult children, stay stuck in the childhood pain, and they want to punish the parent for the pain. So when the pain entered at 16, you're 56 and you're still stuck at 16 emotionally. But you, as the child, realize that I have some emotions to do with this. And so you took the initiative. You became the repairer of the breach.
That's correct. In essence, that's what happened, and I am so glad I had a wonderful relationship with my father. I learned to play golf. I ended up coaching golf in the school system, and I developed some great relationships with young people through that.
Oh, that is so awesome. So now we are going to segue to this phenomenal book, Hearts of Fire, Learning How to Have a God Marriage. But I had the honor of editing the book. So when you edit the book, you look at it, you edit it from a writer's point of view, you edit it from an error point of view, and then you edit it from a reader's point of view. I was a single mother 19 years before I got married. And then I was married 7 years and 7 months before my husband passed away from colon cancer. And now I've been a widow 13 years. And this book blessed every phase of my life. It has blessed. Tell you how much this book has blessed me. The chapters are so simple. When I flip through the book and I look and it says,
absolutely love it because it reminds me of He Say, She Say.
Yes.
You know, and yes. I just absolutely love this book. Here you go, everybody. I'm showing you the book. You can go to Amazon.com. You can order the book. You can type in Stephen Smith or Melanie Smith, Hearts of Fire. The book is very feasible. And it's a wonderful book. Again, like I said, in any phase of your life, whether you're married, whether you're single, whether you're divorced, whether you're contemplating being married, whether you want to be married one day, it is an easy read. It's a fun read, but it's a fulfilling read. So I suggest you get the book. And so when I read the book and went through the book, I made some notes. And so I'm going to go on page 9 right now. And Steve, you say, love for God is why we serve him, right? Love for our spouses is why we serve them, right? Love for our children is why we nurture them, right? Love for the church is why we serve there, right? So we can see that love is an action word. Love does. Love gives, love displays. Love covers, love lifts. Love deposits. Love does not demand a payback. Then you say, we have been taught the wrong thing about love. Society confuses love with sex. That is deep. Love and sex, they don't even equate. Mm-mm. They're two separate things. And yet, so many men and women think that if you have sex with me, you love me. Mm-hmm. And that's not true because that's why you got so many single parents.
That's correct.
You know, and I'm not just speaking from a woman's point of view because there's plenty of single men raising their children The woman walked away. And so if we would let that love be there first, before we make the choice to be intimate, it could change the trajectory of a lot of the lives mm-hmm. that are out here, you know. And for me, as one who, I'll be 59 this year, and as a widow, it's not easy dating in society now. It's really challenging because you have them still my age trying to just have sex. But you don't even know my middle name, my last name. You don't know my favorite color, what I like to eat. You know, you haven't seen me in every season of my life. The spring of my life when everything is blooming. The summer of my life when it's hot and everything is shaking. The fall of my life when everything is getting melancholy and mellowing down. The winter in my life when I've gone through some things. You know, when I've experienced mm-hmm. some things. When I've had some tests and trials. But you want some sex. And I think if we would understand that love is first. And then sex, some of the heartbreak, some of the confusion, some of the shameless choices we make could be eliminated.
And a lot of the young women actually are looking for love mm-hmm. and they have sex because they have mixed it up and they're giving sex to get love because they have a void. They don't have a relationship with their father. They're looking to fill voids in their lives. And they go about it the wrong way.
The wrong way.
Like the old song, looking for love in all the wrong places. Mm-hmm. So because they have a desire to fill a hole in them or a void in them, mm-hmm. and the void is the love of a man, mm-hmm. the father that was supposed to fill them up, they're looking for that. And so they say yes mm-hmm. and just have sex with it, with whomever, mm-hmm. trying to fill the void. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of it, you're still empty, mm-hmm. maybe with a kid. Mm-hmm. Or two or three.
And no daddy.
And
for
exactly.
one, two, or three.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, that was from your introduction of the book.
Yes.
That was from your introduction of the book. So that was a great way to, that caught my, I was like, wait a minute now,
it gave
wait
me
a minute.
Chills when you just read it.
Oh, because it's so real.
It is.
It's real. And again, we discuss real life topics, honey, because we're living in a real world.
Absolutely.
Got to keep it real. But Melanie, on page 41, your perspective, you deal with trouble in relationships as well. Mm-hmm. And it's a fallacy to believe that everybody's relationship is perfect.
Right.
It's a fallacy to believe that all husbands and wives always get along.
Right.
So before I get into what you say, talk about, how long have you both have been married? Because you just celebrated an anniversary.
33 years.
33 years. Now, has it been great all 33 years?
No.
This, you know what? It's funny because there's something that you said, Steve, at church when we found out that your anniversary was the following weekend. And somebody asked that question. He said, no, it was like 3 years of this and then 7 years of that. But then it was 30 good years of this, this, and this. Because you had to first learn each other.
Absolutely.
And when you're dating, you know a certain level. But when you get married, is it true that you begin to develop more of a learning and more? I know for my husband and I, there was layers. We were peeling the onion.
That's right.
And we were seeing layers in marriage that we didn't see in courtship.
But the learning never ends. Mm-hmm. Because as we mature, mm-hmm. we're still growing. We should be.
We should be.
And so if I'm continuing to grow, he has to keep learning me because I'm growing. And vice versa. So it never ends. If you stop, then you begin to have problems there.
Yeah,
you'll have a problem even with it.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, because we don't want to deal with it.
Where people say we grew apart.
Ooh.
What happens is there's some growing going on, but or changing would be more accurate. Going on, but we're not changing together or bothering to learn. Our customer, your spouse is your customer.
Come on now, that's
so
good.
You got to keep up with your
got to service your customer.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow. What I liked also about changing, as we evolve and change, it does not mean that I'm changing him or he's changing me. What it means is he's learning how to approach me differently because my needs are different now. When I was 25, I didn't need him to rub my knees because my knees is fine.
Hello.
But now at 58, almost 59, baby, can you rub my knee? Yes.
That's right.
Absolutely. And so I heard someone say that you have to be prepared when you say, yes, I'll marry you. And when you say, I want to ask her to marry me, you are marrying the future him and the future her.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so you have to be prepared to endure and be whatever they need you to be in the future. Because like you said, it's until death.
Right.
It's until death. And we're always evolving.
Idea. You have no idea what the future him or the future her is going to be until you meet them.
Mm-hmm.
You have no idea. Mm-mm. You don't know that.
Until you meet them. That's until good. Because that's 20 years down
right,
the road.
Exactly.
I got married at 20. Now I'm Mr. You're 40.
Right.
And now I got to meet that 40-year-old husband.
Right. Exactly.
That's good.
Who used to be able to run and now is walking slow.
Right.
Or who, you know.
Yeah.
Or we have, good. You know. Sicknesses mm-hmm. arise. And I mean, we've dealt with some serious, mm-hmm. you know, issues. And a lot of people leave.
They don't fight, they flight.
They say, I didn't sign up for this.
But you did, because it says in sickness and in health.
They forget
for better
part.
Or for worse.
They forget
for
that
richer
part.
Or for richer.
Come on now.
That's the way they think of it. That's absolutely.
Yeah, they forget that part. They really do.
Yeah, you have to wake up every day as one who was married, a widow now. You have to wake up every day with the thought that I'm going to be intentionally loving my husband today. I will intentionally serve him today. I will intentionally let my wife know that I love her today. I will intentionally serve her today. And when I say serve, I just meant be what they need me to be for them this day.
Yeah.
This day.
That's good.
Yeah. That was a good one. That is good. So I'm going to look at just perspective. You say trouble in any marriage is inevitable because we are human beings. We will at some point run into a time when our imperfect personalities get in the way. So often I see younger couples and even some older couples struggle with that because, and there's something my husband checked me early on. He didn't have any children. I was blessed to have a son and a daughter when we got married and immediately became their daddy. He and our youngest daughter, Janae, called each other friend. It was just so good. It would gang up on me and embarrass me in public. It was wonderful. But Janae was going through something and I said, make sure you bring Janae some candy home. And he brought some hard candy. Well, no, she needed chocolates. And so I said, what kind of candy is this for a little kid? No, she needs chocolates right now. This is what she needs right now during this time. I said, it's common sense. And he said, wait a minute, you won't quit telling me that. It is not common sense to me. I have no children. I don't have a daughter going through this. So how would I know? People always want to tell somebody what is common sense, but common sense is based on my common understanding
Absolutely.
Of something. And if he has no understanding of that, it is not common sense.
That's right. That's right.
And so you say, person, we will at some point run into a time when our imperfect personalities get in the way. We expect him or her to know what we're thinking. They wasn't with us all day.
Right. So, and if they were.
And if they were, they still don't know what we're thinking. Like, Cleo, tell me now. Because I'm prophetic. I'm not a psychic.
Hello.
You know, and God, and even though you're prophetic, God doesn't reveal everything to us.
We prophesy in part.
In part. In marriage, you still have to communicate in whole.
Absolutely.
In whole.
It's so imperative. Communication is such an issue right now. I'm seeing it in so many areas, mm-hmm. not just in marriage, but in relationships, period, mm-hmm. where I can see that the enemy is just trying to almost do a Tower of Babel situation where, you know, we're all speaking different languages and nobody is understanding mm-hmm. and is, bringing breach in so many different areas. So it's very important that I do a lot of explaining because that's the teacher in me, because I want to make sure that no one walks away confused. Mm-hmm. So I'll say over and over, do you understand what I'm saying? Do you understand what I'm saying? Because I want you to understand. Mm-hmm. I can't stand miscommunication and misconceptions and mm-hmm. you know, all of the misses mm-hmm. that we keep having mm-hmm. when it doesn't have to be. All we have to do is make sure we're clear so that our hearts mm-hmm. are understood. Don't just hear the words that I say. Hear my heart when I'm speaking. Mm. Because that's out of good. The abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks.
Exactly. The mouth speaks. Did you have anything you wanted to add, Steve?
No.
Oh. What? No, I'm done. Wow. Everybody write that down. Well, you don't have something to speak now, because on page 45 of the book, when it talks about when trouble comes, overcoming adversity, from your perspective, you say, a wise man once said, there are two rules to live by. One, don't sweat the small things. And two, it's all small. There is something, there's a phrase you've coined, and it's the title of your book. It's hard to be big when little got you.
That's right.
Explain that.
Well, that simply means I heard that phrase years ago in a comical way. A couple of fellas joking around. And when I heard it, it hit home for me. And what I heard was God say that we are little gods. We are the sons of God. We are made in his image. And so we oftentimes mess up because we try to rush to the end, especially men. Mm-hmm. We like to, you know, our theme song could be, when you gonna get to the good part? But
we don't own the rights to that.
God,
yeah, we don't own the rights to that song.
God made us that way. We are constantly searching for answers, searching for solutions, and we rush to the conclusion. Well, in our rushing, we miss what we need to be who we are. Just because you have a title, a boy can be the king, the next heir to the throne, but he is not ready to rule until he becomes a man and he learns what it is to rule correctly. And so I like the phrase, it's hard to be big when little got you. Your destiny is big, but your mindset is little.
Oh, that's good.
So you have to free your mind. You have to change your mind. You have to learn and prepare yourself for the bigness in you.
And so that's perfect, because now that gives me, I'm going to mention the topic. I didn't mention the topic in the beginning because I wanted them to get the meat of our conversation. And so the topic of tonight is, what's in your toolbox? And so you're saying that is necessary for success to have proper tools in your toolbox.
Absolutely.
And so what would some of those tools be that a man would need to have so that his little can become big?
Well, the first thing a man needs to have is compassion. We are made in the image of God again, and God is love. And in fact, he commanded us to love our wives as Christ loved the church. And so that means you would give your life for such. And so we need to have compassion. We need to have empathy. Mm-hmm. This world lacks empathy. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be able to put yourself in someone else's shoes to understand where their perspective. Mm. We can't be locked into our perspective only. Mm. You have to be able to, intimacy, for example, is intimacy. So how am I going to be intimate if I don't see you, if I don't know you, if I don't, if it's just surface, how can we be intimate?
That's good, girl. I see why you married him, girl. That was good. He be deep sometimes. And so, that was good. That was good. Intimacy. Wow. And so, hit your point. If we don't communicate.
Yeah.
If we don't communicate. Are who they think the person wants them to be. Yes. And not who they are, because they're afraid that they'll leave them. You shouldn't have gotten married if you couldn't be who you are in the beginning.
Right.
And so I think that's the reason why there's such a breakdown in communication. Or it's easy for me to see his faults, and it's easy for him to see my faults. But when I look in the mirror, I see me. But I don't want to deal with the part. Me.
Right.
Speak on that, please.
Yep. That is the part. Is dealing with it. Was scripture in the Bible talks about looking in the mirror and walk away and forgetting what you see. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I see that, you know, big zit, and I'm gonna act like it's not there. Mm. You know. And so we have to deal with us, because I can't stand, you know, before the throne and give an account for you. I have to give an account for me. I can't even give an account for him. I have to give an account for me. So I am responsible and accountable for me. Mm-hmm. And with that, you know, knowing that, with that information, I have to be willing to deal with me. And a lot of times people don't want, we push stuff, press it down, sweep it under the rug, act like it didn't happen. We learned in a class yesterday, that's the reason that we have a whole lot of, you know, emotional and mental situations, I'll call them, going on right now, is because we grew up in a society and in households where, right, only don't, what happens in here stays in here.
We know how Uncle Charlie is.
Right. We're not going to talk about that. We don't deal with that. So we grow up thinking there's something wrong with. Right. It's something wrong with talking about that. So now I'm doing what I saw you do. And you told me not to talk about what you do. So if you told me not to talk about it when you did it, then why should I talk about it when I do it? I'm repeating the behaviors that I saw in the house, but I can't talk about it. Mm-hmm. So now I'll just grow up and repress it, not deal with it. Mm. But my personality is exuding it. But because I've been taught not to deal with it, I won't deal with it. So I see I have an issue, but I won't talk about it. I won't deal with it. But everybody else has to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. So what you won't say verbally, you shout.
Exactly.
Physically.
Okay. Yes. And what's really interesting is that when we attempt to hide something about ourselves, ultimately, we end up hiding it from ourselves. We become blind to it. If you know any habitual liars, that's all it is. It's really a shock syndrome. People lie to cover their faults. Mm-hmm. And so they tell these lies over and over again, and everyone around them knows they're lying.
But nobody, they're starting to believe it, because the more they tell it, the more they believe the lie.
They believe
it. Correct. And so when we do that, we're keeping secrets, but we keep it in the dark. And that's the devil's realm, darkness.
It really is. And then what happens, based on what you said, Mel, is that it begins to become a generational issue.
Absolutely.
Then. And what happens, it's systemically, is controlling the dynamic of the legacy.
Correct.
Because it's perpetual. It keeps continuing and continuing and continuing until somebody finally says, enough is enough. I'm gonna break this cycle. You know? And it's not easy. But here's our word again. It's necessary. In order to live in the fullness of the joy and the grace and the blessings and the overflow and a healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. It's necessary to just say, this is what happened. This is how it went down. And now this is what we're going to do from this point on. You know, and it takes a lot of courage sometimes to do that, because sometimes it's the pastor that has this stuff going on. Or it's the mother of the church that has some things going on, or the musician. You know, it's usually strong people sometimes that seems to hold the darkest areas in their lives, because they're leaders, because it's usually a generation of leaders in the family.
Yeah.
And so we don't talk about it because they will judge us then.
Right.
But we have to present ourselves as being perfect vessels because we're in leadership, or
right.
because we love God, because we're pastors, apostles, right. and all of that. And that's not true.
Not right. at all. And you see a lot of suicide as a result, because it's so...
In the church.
Yeah. It's so hard to hold. Mm-hmm. I'm now it's so big because I've been repressing it for so long. I don't know how else to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to check out. Mm-hmm. So when you see a lot of large name people who had large positions, or even in corporate, you know, corporate mm-hmm. America,
yeah.
and they are presidents and of companies and yeah. CEOs, and then they commit suicide. Mm-hmm. The same stuff, like maybe they, you know, stole some money or whatever, mm-hmm. and they can't deal with the repercussions of what's going on. Mm-hmm. They just decide, well, I'm going to just check out. So, you know, another thing that goes along with the compassion and the love in the toolbox has to be forgiveness.
Come on, that grace.
Right.
The grace that we get from God, we have to extend to somebody else.
Exactly. And when we learn to do that, then it'll be easier for us to deal with ourselves, because we know that people are extending us grace. Mm-hmm. That's what love is. Love is so much. But when people don't feel mm-hmm. that the grace is there, then it's hard for them to deal with that. You know, so if I know I have this horrible part of me yeah. that I need to deal with,
yeah.
And I need to go to somebody. I won't go to him, but I can come to you mm-hmm. and say, help me, sister, deal with this. Mm-hmm. And I know that you are going to extend me grace. Mm-hmm. You've opened up the door for me to be able to share mm-hmm. so that I can then begin to heal.
Absolutely.
But if the grace isn't there, absolutely. Where do I go? So I'll just keep it.
And then it's like a pressure cooker. The top pops off.
Exactly.
Last month we had Mike Berry as my guest.
Yes.
And Mike had a documentary that I was a part of called Pressure, and it dealt with how those of us who fight depression, how we deal with that. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I said was, it was kind of hard because preacher's kid, grandfather chairman of deacon board, godfather was a pastor, grandmother church clerk, mama sunk her face off in church, you know, I held national offices in the Congress of Christian Education. How dare I be broken?
Mm-hmm.
How right. dare I not be whole?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's hard sometimes because they tell us to trust God for everything, but they take a Tylenol for a headache. But if I say I'm going to see a psychiatrist, that is the devil. And that's just a spirit. It's a demonic force. Well, your headache's a demonic force too, then. And what that does is, you know, it keeps people silent.
Yes.
You know, when if it's, and that's it, stuck. And if you're stuck, you're stagnant.
Yep.
If you're stagnant, you're dead. So you're a vegetable. You are a walking zombie.
You are dormant.
Dormant.
A doormat.
A doormat. Just
being
that's
walked
it.
Walked over.
And frustrated. And yes. so now more and more pressure. And so they yes. snap, crackle, and pop.
Yes.
And so I think that's why it's so important in our toolbox to also have hearing aids. Oh. So we can hear to aid them.
Absolutely. Hearing is so key to all relationships. That's why I believe God gave us
Two ears
and just one mouth on purpose. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to listen twice as much, at least.
Well, the Bible says be quick to hear and slow to speak.
That is correct.
I was just getting ready to say it.
There you go.
And the better you listen, the better you can solve, the better you can evolve. Listening is the key to all knowledge and wisdom. It really is. The more you pay attention, you listen, the more you welcome in, mm-hmm. you welcome in knowledge mm-hmm. and wisdom and gain what the other person or persons bring mm-hmm. to the table. Mm-hmm. If I just stay myself, then I'm just bringing the potato chips to the party. And
that's it.
And that's all we got is chips if I keep to myself. But now if we open up, we have a whole smorgasbord.
That's it. And here's the thing. You might start off bringing potato chips, but you don't always bring the potato chips. That is there correct. Might come a time when you bring the ribs.
That is correct.
You know, but you have to start somewhere. And correct. So if that's all you can do, thank God that you can bring some potato chips, that you can contribute. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes if all you can do is just show up, because guess what? You will take so much more away.
Yes.
You know, because you showing up doesn't mean we're at the table. You have your glasses of water. I have my little blinged out tumbler of water. And just because it's here, we have to partake of mm-hmm. it. You have to be in the atmosphere to part.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, the atmosphere.
Take of it. Mm-hmm. You know, being outside the building thirsty and the glasses are here on the table is not going to quench our thirst.
That's
but
right.
We're in the atmosphere where what we need is here. And so if you're thirsty, have sense enough to drink.
Absolutely.
That's why the scripture says, forsake not the assembling of yourselves. And I know it means for us to come to church, but we also need to be connected even outside of church.
Yes.
Forsake not the assembling of yourselves. And so to assemble means to put together.
Yes.
To connect, mm-hmm. to build, mm-hmm. to establish. Mm-hmm. We're assembling.
Jointly fit.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's what's happening when we come together. I think I said it on last Sunday. So if there's a, like a puzzle, there's mm-hmm. a piece missing on this side of the puzzle piece, but on the piece that fits into it, it extends out. And so it joins in, and which means where I might have a deficit, you have an abundance mm-hmm. and vice versa. So I can give you what you need and you can give me what mm-hmm. I need that makes us whole. Mm-hmm. So that's where the wholeness comes in. Again, we have to be willing to do that. Mm-hmm. Because if we're not willing, if we stay at home mm-hmm. and then we don't get in the atmosphere, mm-hmm.
wherever the atmosphere happens to be,
then we won't get what we need.
Right. And then you're dormant. And then the thoughts that are not true.
Right.
Begin to binge watch. It's like I always say, don't allow your thoughts to binge watch.
Yeah.
And I said, what do you mean by binge watch? I said, you know how you watch a movie or a show that somebody says, hey, have you ever said no? So you start from the beginning and you catch all the way up, you binge watch it.
Mm-hmm.
It begins to play stuff in your head as if you were binge watching a series to catch up over and over and over. And then you begin to believe that lie.
Yeah, we call it rehearsing.
Right. There it is, rehearsing. That's exactly right. For a performance that will never happen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That will never happen.
Or rehearsing something that has happened. Mm-hmm. Has happened, mm-hmm. and you rehearse the feelings of that. You rehearse all the pain that you dealt with over and over and over again. So it's as if it happened today.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly.
And then the next day is mm-hmm. the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so the old folks used to say, let bygones be bygones.
The Bible says, let the dead bury the dead.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. That's important. Now, I'm going to get to the end of the book. This is, Steve, you said this about marriage. I believe you said it. Yep, Steve's perspective. Marriage is first and foremost commitment. It says, I cannot say that it was easy, but if you take on the right perspective, it will be easier for you. That perspective that I am speaking of is this, and the two shall become one. It's no longer me, myself, and I, but it should be we and us. No one loses without the other, and no one wins without the other. We are one. Marriage is not for the faint of heart. Real marriage is for those who are mature lovers, givers, not takers, and those who are ready to commit wholeheartedly to share their life with someone. That means you have to be vulnerable.
That is correct.
Then Mel, you say, it's Melanie's perspective. So after 30 plus years together, we realize that we are soulmates. People who observe our interactions often say they were made for each other. True. We have decided that when all else fails, we are best friends. We enjoy each other's company. We make each other laugh and we finish each other's sentences. We still have our times when we get on each other's nerves, but we love to be with each other. We minister together. We sing together. And now we write books together. So after careful consideration, I realized that there is no one else I'd rather be with. I would marry Stephen Jerome Smith Sr. all over again. I still do. It is important to have the proper tools in your toolbox so that when something comes up, you can reach in the toolbox because you've already discussed your boundaries in your relationships. You've discussed what I need from you. He's discussed what he needs from you. You've already come to some understanding. And then when there's a flag on a play, you even have things that you do to deal with. And wait a minute, we need to have a meeting about this. How are we going to discuss this now?
Absolutely.
That's what we call it, a business meeting. It's time for a business meeting. That's what we call it.
I like that. I like that. And guess what? And then once you do all of that and apply it, you still do. Marriage is not for the faint. It isn't. You said it best, Steve. It is not for the faint. It is work. And you have to make sure that you work it every day. But it is so fulfilling to have a life partner that gets you. And you don't have to put on any airs. You can just be Steve. You can just be Mel. You're great examples. To those of us who are single, but you're just great examples and great tools to the kingdom of God. And I'm glad that you both are in my toolbox.
Amen.
So give me just a statement from both of you, separate though. Give me something that you would like to tell them to tell the women. And then I want you to say something to the men.
Well, to the women, I would say, this is the way women typically fight is with words. Mm-hmm. And most men have their love language is words of affirmation.
Mm-hmm.
We are made in the image of God. God mm-hmm. likes praise.
Mm-hmm.
He needs praise.
Mm-hmm.
And so women beat their men up oftentimes with their mouth. And they really don't think about the damage that's being done. They just, because that's the way they fight.
Mm-hmm.
They know they can't physically mm-hmm. beat their man. So I'm going to fight back with these words, where these words are emasculating him.
Okay.
And then when you tear him all the way down, then you go back and you're looking for a man with your man is you've emasculated him. You've torn him down. And you are the single most person who holds his heart. And so what you say carries a lot of weight.
Okay. I like that. So sugar and spice and everything nice.
Absolutely.
Mel?
I would say to the men to even pay attention, as Steve was saying, how women fight, but still listen to the words that they are speaking when they are saying hurtful words, because they're still speaking out of their heart.
Right.
So they are saying what their issues are, the issues in their heart, they are speaking them. And even when they say them the wrong way, people typically shut down, men will shut down and stop listening. And so then we have this cycle being repeated. I'm saying it over and over, even though I'm saying it out of frustration and anger and the wrong way, I'm still telling you there's an issue and what the issue
is. So speak to the men, and so what should a man do?
So listen to what's being said is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Hear the words and not the way that the words are coming out.
That's
I'm not excusing
that's good
the behavior or the language or the anger in the words. But if you can step outside of your emotion for a moment and hear what's being said and respond, not react, but respond to that, to the heart of the woman, she'll change the way she's talking. Absolutely. I want to thank you.
Eat the meat and spit out the bones.
That's to eat the meat and spit out the bones. I want to thank you both for being my guests today on Conversations with Auntie. It has been a blessed pleasure and an honor. And again, I'm just so grateful that both of you are intricate parts in my toolbox. Everybody, thanks for watching Conversations with Auntie. Stay well, take care, be blessed. But most of all, you be a blessing to someone. Smooches. Bye-bye.